Ari Rosenbaum here with another episode of that 401k podcast. This week we're going to talk about 401k tasks that I know you're probably not doing as a plan sponsor. Just really simple, basic tasks that we all talk about that plan sponsors don't really do. So anyway, as first things first, let's talk about some of the events going on. Still doing the virtual events. The next event is going to be that 401k virtual bunch. Guest is going to be Chad Azara. That's going to be next week, Thursday the 27th at 4 p.m. Eastern. Great time with these bunches because it's, you know, one-on-one. People interject with some questions. But it's interesting and different than, let's say, you know, some of the virtual conferences with the presentations. So Chad's a great guest. Big Cleveland fan because he's from there. So we'll probably talk about that as well. And talk about what he's doing at PCS. You know, the challenges of being in the third-party administration space. So we'll certainly get his insights on that as well. That 401k Virtual Conference 6, number 5 was just last week. Number 6 is going to be on Friday, September 25th, 12 noon. Sign up. It's up there on LinkedIn, Twitter. You can find the link and sign up. It's free, a couple hours. Going to have some good presentations. Lyle Himbaugh from Granite Group will be there, and some other presenters as well. And then, of course, we got the big event in January 21st and 22nd, that 401k National Virtual Conference. We're taking the national conference, going fully virtual. People are signing up, which is great. We've got some new sponsors. MassMutual signed up. Of course, Granite Group is going to be part of it. So as we get closer to the event, we're signing up more sponsors, more attendees. And this week, had lunch with my buddy Larry, talking about people we're going to book for the event. I looked at one person that he mentioned that would be a real treat. So hopefully we can book that person. People are wondering who it's going to be, but it's somebody who, if we could book it, it's somebody that is truly a really larger than sports icon, not just sports, but everything else. Really historical icon, and hopefully we can have it booked. And we'll book another guest as well. And again, these are going to be like the real events. Just, you know, the only difference is there's not going to be any food. As an attendee, you could sign up. The early bird special is $20.21 just if you want to attend the events. If you want autographs, there's a level for that. And there's a level, obviously, if you want T-shirt and the autographs and whatnot. So hopefully you could sign up. Go to that 401ksite.com for further information about the virtual conference. And we'll have, of course, as we get closer to the event, more and more guests, more and more sponsors, and more presentations as well. So let's get back to kind of 401k tasks that I know you're probably not doing as a plan sponsor. Listen, you know, I'm going to have my dental appointment coming up. The dentist is going to tell me about the beauties of flossing. And, you know, flossing's great in between the teeth. Get rid of that tar and plaque and all that kind of stuff. And it's something I really should do, but I really never do. Mainly, not to really gross you out, but I have one of those mouths where I needed a palate expander, but I grew up in the days where you had orthodontists who did believe in palate expanders, so therefore I have 4 teeth less than normal people. My kids grew up in the time of palate expanders, and they were able to increase the size and avoid spacing problems. So I don't floss because I could barely get in between my teeth. It's just they're just jam-packed together. But, you know, there's so many things that we're supposed to do, and we just don't do it. You know, listen, eating vegetables, eating fiber, watching calories, and all that kind of stuff, we really don't do that. And there's so many times when it comes to plan sponsors and, you know, experts, I guess I'm an expert, experts like myself kind of mention are things that, you know, plan sponsors are doing. And you just know that most of the small and medium-sized plans are just not doing it. And it's to their benefit that they do it. It sounds great, but they're just too lazy to do it. So, number one on my list is keeping plain documents. I jokingly say that the IRS takes a Sergeant Schultz line when it comes to plain documents. If there are missing restatements, if there are missing plain amendments, the IRS takes the position of Sergeant Schultz and they hear nothing, see nothing, know nothing. Which means if you don't have a copy of it, in their opinion, you didn't do it. That's a problem because keeping up to date with restatements and plan amendments is a qualification. If you don't restate your plan document, you have a qualification problem where your plan could lose tax-exempt status. You would lose the deductibility of your contributions. Your plan participants would have an immediate constructive receipt of income of their retirement plan benefits. That's a big problem. There's nothing worse than being on a plan audit by the government and you don't have a copy of a certain restatement or you don't have a copy of a certain plan amendment. We can't go back in time and sign retroactive amendments. These are qualification problems. So that's why it's necessary that while we have a 7-year kind of record-keeping requirement for plans in terms of record-keeping, when it comes to plan documents, we need to keep all copies. And not only do we need all copies for qualification purposes and under plan review, it's also a good thing to have because I've dealt with plans over time where restatements are wrong, provision doesn't carry to provision, and sometimes you have to look and see you know, what happened. I mean, years ago when I was working for a union law firm, I actually had to look to the current, the first plan document, 1976, and see what happened in terms of crediting service for these union plans. And there was an issue that they could transpose to another plan document. It's like a game of telephone. If plan provisions don't stay consistent, if people are not doing a correct job and, they keep on repeating mistakes, and there may be a protected benefit that was lost that has to be, brought back because you can't lose protected benefits from restatement to restatement. So that's a big problem. So that's why it's important that plan sponsors keep a copy of all their plan documents. Number one, checking the valuation report. Checking the valuation report. You know, the third-party administrator is going to send you a valuation report. It's going to have, plan summaries of the plan provisions. It's going to have a census of all your employees, the contributions they receive, the hire date, the termination date, hours of service, birth dates, retirement ages, all that kind of stuff. Most plan sponsors, take a valuation report, they put it in the back of the drawer. They don't really check it. And the major reason you have to check it is to see if any of the information provided by the third-party administrator is wrong. Birth dates, if you got a birth date wrong, that could be a problem not only for new comparability, but it could be a problem for retirement age when people become 100% vested if you have an incorrect retirement age. It's important to check it, see if there are any glaring errors, to see if there are any glaring errors dealing with the plan document. If the summary of their plan provisions are inconsistent with a copy of the plan document that you have or a copy of the summary plan description. It's a great way to, look at whether the information about highly compensated employees or key employees is correct as well. You want to make sure the valuation report is consistent with both your practice of plan administration as well as the plan document. Compliance testing is really an exact science. If there's anything wrong, the test is going to be incorrect. And if the test is going to be incorrect, you could have a whole host of problems that you don't realize until years later when the errors are discovered. Garbage in, garbage out. That's what I always say about wrong data. Wrong data will get you wrong results and a whole host of problems years later down the line when it's discovered, especially if it's discovered on an IRS or Department of Labor audit. One thing I know plan sponsors aren't really doing very good job at is verifying hardship requests. There are some plan providers who take on the assumption of hardship requests and don't require plan participants to prove the hardship. You just really can't simply take a participant's word that they have a hardship. It's got to be documented. It's got to be documented because you have a safe harbor for hardships in terms of what you can allow hardships for. And, you know, you have a higher power to abide by what your plan document says as pertains to hardship requests. And, you know, we all love the honor system, but you just really can't afford as a plan sponsor and a plan fiduciary to take a plan participant's word that they are eligible for the hardship request. You know, most plan sponsors should be doing that, and I know quite a bit don't. I'm a plan administrator for several plans. I'm an ERISA attorney for several plans. I verify hardship requests. You're going to make sure that, you know, if there's money required to stave off an eviction, that there is an eviction notice or something documenting from the landlord. Same thing with any education expenses. You want to make sure that they're, you know, proper, not, you know, bills from 5 years ago that the plan participant wants to get recompensated on. There's a lot of funny business going on with hardship requests, so it's really important for a plan sponsor to really identify that and verify, you know, and by the hardship provision, by the Internal Revenue Code, and by the plan documents. Next on the list is obviously reviewing the Form 5500 and or the audit report. You know, the third-party administrator is going to prepare the Form 5500. If you have a plan that has 100 to 120 more participants, you may be required to have an audit from a CPA firm. You know, and the plan's got to be, you know, the 5500's got to be filed by, you know, the July 31st or the October 15th deadline. You know, problem with blindly following a Form 5500 without signing it is that, you know, the Form 5500 is signed under penalties of perjury. And you also want to make sure that the 5500 doesn't have any glaring errors. And if you answer yes to certain questions, you may have problems of an IRS audit. So, for example, if you say, listen, I don't have an ERISA bond and I'm an ERISA covered plan, that makes you a target for an audit. You have late contributions, and you didn't go through the VFCP process with the Department of Labor and file the 5330. You got a problem there as well. And reviewing the audit is also really important because it might cite some issues with plan compliance that can also lead to an IRS or DOL audit. You know, the IRS, especially the DOL, reads those audits, and so if there's a glaring problem that the auditor cite. That also could be a subject to a government audit. Multiple errors in a plan audit, that can lead to an audit as well by the government. You know, there's obviously been a review by the Department of Labor of a lot of plan auditors, and they see a huge deficiency in the quality of certain 401k plan audits. Next is not reviewing fees. You know, plan sponsor, they take this fee disclosure regulation and they take the fee disclosure that they get, they put it in the back of the drawer, or they throw it out like they do with the bank, you know, your local bank's privacy statement, you know, they chuck it. And, you know, the responsibility of a plan sponsor is to make sure as a plan fiduciary that all costs are reasonable for the services provided. And you can't determine that when you don't review your fee disclosures and you don't. Check about what's out there in the marketplace in terms of benchmarking. You know, what are other similar providers charging for a plan? We want to make sure that, you know, the fees are reasonable. You don't have to pick the cheapest provider. It has to be reasonable for the services provided. And you really just can't take the word from your plan provider that they're really, really inexpensive. You know, I always use the comparison, you know, using, you know, certain contractors on my house not doing a very good job of checking their fees out and getting hammered. That's not something you could afford to do as a plan sponsor / plan fiduciary. Next, reviewing plan providers. I always joke that, you know, kind of like the movie Casino, De Niro's character, Sam Ace Rosting, talks about, you know, the holes in the desert where a lot of grudges were buried, which means their bodies buried in these holes around the desert. And I find when it comes to retirement plans, when they're plan errors, they're kind of usually always buried like a hole in the desert in a casino. But they're only discovered when there's a change of TPA or when there's a plan audit by the IRS, Department of Labor. So I've had that situation in the past where a client changes TPAs. One or two years later, the new TPA realizes, or even as soon as they got hired, realizes, you know, the top-heavy test was done incorrectly. The maybe the ADP, ACP test was done incorrectly. Maybe the test wasn't done at all. So I've had so many problems over the years where it's only discovered 2 or 3 years later down the line after the errors are first created. And that's a big problem. So it's really important to review plan providers to see that their work they're doing is sufficient. You know, you have a advisor who just doesn't bother showing up and you don't hear back from and hasn't had a meeting with you in over a year. Well, that's somebody you got to review and certainly consider replacing. That's just my two cents. You can't afford to have what I call a milk carton advisor. A milk carton advisor to me was an advisor that's certainly missing. You can't locate them or her. You haven't heard back from them. And they're getting paid their quarterly fee. That's a problem. Next, reviewing trust statements. You know, a 401k plan is not only just a plan, it's also a trust. There's a trust account with the plan's custodians that are, you know, the plan custodians hold your plan's assets. I'm sure, you know, obviously a huge majority of plan sponsors never bother to review their plan trust statements. And I think the reason you really should check that is for inflows and outflows to see that there are any disturbances or outflows that are not consistent with what was going on with plan participants terminating and being paid out. Listen, I've dealt with a couple of plan fiduciaries over the years, 316 administrators and other plan fiduciaries who stole money from the plan. And had the plan sponsor merely looked at the trust statements, they would have seen the money that was missing. You know, the chances of a plan fiduciary or any other type of plan provider stealing money is slim to none. But still, just taking that, you know, couple-minute look at a trust statement could go a long way to make sure that there's not any type of theft or, you know, even these days with cyber crimes and whatnot. It just makes too much sense to review a trust statement, its quarterly statement, see what's going on, seeing if there are any big discrepancies that you could see that there could be a problem. And last but not least on this episode in terms of what plan sponsors I know they're not doing and they should be doing it, getting input from plan participants. I always say relationships in my life that have failed – whether it was my fault or somebody else's fault, you know, I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong, is a lack of communication. Whether it's family members or friends or business associates, that lack of communication, assuming the worst out of people, not talking to people when you're upset with them. These are communication problems, and they lead to you know, results that you probably wouldn't have wanted. You know, I had a good friend once who stopped talking to me because I made complaints about her friend taking pictures of her kids at camp because that was her job, taking pictures of kids at camp, and she would only take pictures of her kids. And I complained that to the camp, and the camp let it be known to this person who was friends of my friend, and I think that if I handled things a little bit better, you know, maybe that relationship should have been salvaged. But, you know, she gave me the silent treatment, and a good relationship went, you know, caca, as we would say in French. And I think that it's important that plan sponsors get input from plan participants. They, you know, plan sponsors need to remember that a 401k plan is an employee benefit. It's there to be a tool to recruit employees and to retain them. And when you don't seek input from your plan participants and you just change providers without, you know, listening to them, and, you know, maybe there's something in the plan with the current provider they liked, it's always important just to get their two cents. Not to say that their two cents should be the deciding factor on what you do, but getting their input goes a long way. I was, you know, working for a certain company, and they switched the plan from Fidelity to another provider that I wasn't crazy about. Didn't ask us for our input. I wasn't happy about it. You know, I nobody listened to me. The same thing when I was at that law firm, and I recommended an advisor, and Pat picked somebody else, and then Pat, you know, didn't seek my input about changing TPAs when she said for years and years, oh, we're happy with our current TPA. That advisor that I didn't recommend, she said it as well. Oh, I don't want to rock the boat. Of course, they decided to rock the boat and didn't tell me until I was overboard. So I think it's really important that plan sponsors identify that it is a plan benefit. Like health insurance, like the free coffee and the free milk and the gym benefit. And it's great to get a 2 cents from plan participants. I'm not saying a plan participant should be on the investment committee or on a plan committee, but I think it's a great way to see how they're feeling about the plan, get their insight, get their input, send them a poll, ask questions. Are they satisfied with the plan? What could they do better? So I think it's extremely important that they do that. So that's it on that. So again, all the events coming up, go to that401ksite.com for further information of that 401k National Virtual Conference in January of 2021. Literally a day after Inauguration Day, probably we'll have some political discussions as to who the next president will be or who will be taking the office as President of the United States on January 20th. So we have that to look forward to, and we have the other events, that 401k Virtual Bunch next Thursday, and then that 401k Virtual Conference number 6 on Friday, September 25th, in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So anyway, hope you guys tune in next week with another episode of that 401k podcast. Thank you.